I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We have a quorum present. Representative Kahn, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, they are superb. I'll remove the minutes.
For April the 8th, okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The first bill is House File 2949 by Representative Purcell. It deals with the unemployment insurance program. And Purcell, welcome. And I'll move that House File 2949, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. And if you'd like to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. 2949, Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council bill. This is basically an agency bill, housekeeping bill, if you will. And that Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, for the committee's information, is made up of AFL-CIO, Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota Recruiting Staffing Association, Legal Aid, Federation of Independent Businesses, contractors, legislators, and including Representative Mahoney, Representative O'Neill, and Representative Gunther. And there's a consensus from this council on all provisions in this bill, and we are here with a fiscal note, and I presume this is in your packets. The fiscal note was prepared on the Senate side. The bills are identical, House and Senate, and I have been advised that that our House fiscal staff concur with that fiscal analysis from the Senate. So with any further information, I have some representatives, some staff from Deed with me here, and so we would entertain questions or provide more information as you wish.
Mr. And it's my understanding that the fiscal note reflects the lower interest rate, is where the savings on interest is kind of the bill in a nutshell relative.
That's my understanding too, Mr. Chair, and I would defer on some of those questions to the Deed staff here, Mr. Caligari and others. Okay.
Maybe if one of them just wants to comment about that aspect, being that that's the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Rick Caligari. I'm the director of the Unemployment Insurance Program at Deed. And the major thing that's happening in this bill, in addition to some policy things and mostly housekeeping, is we're lowering the interest rate that we charge to individuals who are guilty of fraud and overpayment, assessed penalty and interest as a result of that, and also employers that refuse to report. And that interest rate has been 18% since 1982. It was set when interest rates were very, very high. We're lowering it to 12%. You do need an impetus for folks to pay you back. And 12% is a very common rate used around the country. We had used 12% in Minnesota for about 30 years prior to 1982. And so we're going back down to that lower interest rate for fraud overpayments and for employers that that do not report. It doesn't have any impact on the general fund. It does have an impact on a special account called the contingency account. And it does have some impact on the UI Trust Fund. However, the UI Trust Fund is very, very healthy, very solvent. There are still 20-some states that are still in debt status as a result of the Great Recession, but Minnesota has recovered. Our trust fund is solvent and very healthy, and so this should not have any significant impact relative to the trust fund.
Okay, any questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say, I'm just curious, the trust fund balance in the projection and outline bienniums, do you have projections for like the next two biennium's the trust fund balance, and are you doing anything to maybe correct that?
Mr. Chair, members, it's difficult to do outlying bienniums because, as you know, the UI Trust Fund and UI programs in general respond to recessions and cyclical recessions. As I said, there's over 20 states still in debt because of the last one. We have a situation in Minnesota where our tax rates trigger up when the trust fund goes down, and then they trigger back down again when the trust fund goes up. We're kind of unique in that. So we have kind of a natural built-in safety net. Our trust fund, we predict the first quarter revenues will come in this month, and they'll get posted to the trust fund by the beginning of next month. We expect it'll be about $1.2 billion, which is an all-time historical high.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And have you made projections for the next biennium? I mean, that recovery is unprecedented, but it's because the employers are paying in is why it's there. And what's the plan? Are you have any projections? You have no indication on the next biennium, or do you do projections? I guess that'd be my first question. And if I can just ask the second one, are you evaluating the minimum premiums you're charging for employers that never have claims against them?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, excuse me. The trust fund will track with employment. It just tracks with employment and the unemployment rate. I, back at the office, have, I mean, we do project out. I don't know what good it does you because it's all about the economy and whatever the employment is. And the unemployment rate, that's what the trust fund will be. So we have an all-time historical high trust fund right now. If we hit a recession, that'll go down to zero and very quickly, if we have, depending on how severe the recession is. And that's just the cyclical nature of employment and unemployment in the unemployment insurance program and trust funds. Again, I think that we're in good shape here. We could probably withstand a minor recession. I don't know that we could withstand anything like we experienced with the Great Recession. However, most states went into debt. Their trust funds went into debt in the last recession. And there's an automatic mechanism with the feds that they front you money or loan you money when you go into debt.
And, Mr. Chair, thank you. And the minimum premium we're today are what compared to what they historically were?
Mr. Chair, members, we enacted a huge tax cut this year because of the health of the trust fund. I believe it was close to $300 million in tax cuts to employers. The minimum rate employer pays the minimum as we are prescribed by federal law. But the base rates went from 0.5 to 0.1. So the tax break, relatively speaking, I believe the average employer got a tax break of about $165 per employee this year. And because the maximum rated employers, the maximum experience rated employers, the ones who pay the most and have the most seasonal unemployment, they got an average of about $429 per employee tax cut.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then the chair renews his motion that House File 2949, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed in the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
I'm sure some of you have been eyeing the muffins at the end of the table. And they are brought here this morning by Ms. Polkamp and Ms. Conley in celebration of the chair's birthday, I think, is what the reason was. Oh, Representative Gunther wanted to comment.
You made my comment, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, okay.
Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. It was actually on the 18th, but we were on break, and so...
I'm used to people having their birthday more than one day at a time. My wife does that often.
Well, I got to celebrate it twice this year, about three times now. on Sunday, we had the family over, and so I had a surprise birthday cake, and then on the 18th, we had a small celebration, and now again this morning. So I want to thank you both. Appreciate that. And if members just at your leisure grab a muffin, and the chair will figure out how to get one too. I've been eyeing them as well. So with that, again, thank you, and we'll go to the next bill on the agenda, which is House File 2543, Representative Hortman. Oh, my goodness. Which one is the chocolate one? That's what that is. Okay.
I'll get what bill are we one. Adding to the agenda?
Thank you.
Very smart.
And my cake on Sunday was chocolate as well. That's just kind of my favorite. So, okay. The chair moves that House File 2443, the third engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Did I read the wrong number? House File, the chair moves House File 2543, the third engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. What number did I read? 2440. Okay. Just off by 100. Okay. Representative Hartman.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and happy belated birthday. I'm a big proponent of the birthday week of celebration. So, House File 2543 is a PCA policy bill. It is a pretty short bill. What it does is it speeds up the goal for the permitting process. There's two different tiers of environmental permitting goals in the proposed bill. The Tier 1 permit goal is 90 days, which is most permits, and the Tier 2 permit goal is 150 days for the more complex permits. This continues the work that was started by the Small Business Caucus in 09 and 10 and continued by Representative Fabian in 2011 and 2012. It streamlines the process further by creating a 10-year permit rather than a 5-year permit in certain categories, so that people need to return less often to get their permit renewed. It increases flexibility in the permitting process by allowing people seeking a permit to get an expedited process if they're willing to pay for the additional staff time to move up to the front of the line, which essentially amounts to sort of a fee-for-service provision. It would put in place a water pollution trading system so that on a voluntary basis, if parties wished to, in order to meet their water pollution goals, they could trade for credits with somebody else who was able to achieve the reduction in pollution more cheaply. It alters the Minnesota Data Practices Act with regard to the submission of electronic information. The agency has created a program you could think of like TurboTax. When you're doing your taxes, you put in information, and until you press send, the Department of Revenue doesn't have your tax information, but you want to save that and maybe come back and work on it later. So this would allow the agency to operate a system like that where the user could keep their information confidential until they're ready to hit the send button, but in a program created by the agency. It would make the permitting efficiency report an annual report instead of semi-annual. And the area of the bill that's generated the most conversation as the bill has moved through committees is the provision regarding streamlining the process of resolving disputes. What the agency is proposing to do in the bill is to put more disputes into a simpler dispute resolution process. Right now there's two dispute resolution processes for environmental problems. There's the APO process, which you could think of like conciliation court, which you don't need lawyers and is faster. And there's the sort of real court process, or in the environmental world they call it stipulation agreements. When we in the legislature increased the limit for conciliation court a few years ago, we went from 7,500 to 15,000. And by doing that, we send more disputes into the cheaper, faster mechanism of conciliation court. In this bill, the PCA is proposing to do the same thing in the area of environmental problems. They're proposing to raise the cap for the the simple dispute resolution process, from $10,000 to $20,000. There's a whole separate area of statute where they set out the fines. They're not proposing to increase any fines. What they're proposing to do is route more cases through the simpler process, and then that way have less in the more complicated process. The APO process takes on average 256 days. The other process that usually results in a stipulated agreement takes about 865 days. So for a business person looking at, do you want a 256-day dispute resolution process or an 865-day process, generally speaking, you'd prefer to pay your lawyer for 256 days if you choose to hire a lawyer. And then we're making some changes to the septic system violation process. And that area has been agreed to by the folks who do this work in the field. The industry folks have signed off on the proposed changes. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair. And we're in Ways and Means because it saves money.
And if people will take a look at the fiscal note, that's right. And it also saves part of a position as I look at this. So, Mr. Kigelka, did you want to comment? Okay, any questions on the bill? Well, seeing none, then the chair renews his motion that House File 2543, the third engrossment, be recommended to be placed in the General Register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Next bill is Representative Atkins. And this one will be, I think this is the first time this session, if I recall, that we'll be taking up a Senate file. So we'll have a couple of motions to address that. No, that's just fine. Representative Atkins, would you care to make a motion on the bill, which deals with what we call the FAIR Plan health insurance issue?
I would, Mr. Chairman. I'd move House File or Senate File 1689, the first engrossment, be placed on the recommended be placed on the General Register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and Representative Atkins, then you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chairman, to substitute the House language contained in House File 1938, first engrossment. I'd move that be substituted into 1689.
Okay, and that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Maybe you want to just comment on the bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of myself and Representative Beard, we are the authors of this bill. And the 5,689 farmers and small businesses and homeowners who get their insurance through the FAIR Plan. The FAIR Plan was created in 1969 by the legislature to assist those who weren't able to get their insurance anywhere else. Unfortunately, we didn't give them the ability to purchase their health insurance through the CGIP or CGIP, however you want to pronounce it, the State Employee Group Insurance Plan. And they have experienced severely escalating health insurance costs over the course of the last several years. Those costs, of course, just get passed along to their customers. So on behalf of those 5,689 farmers and businesses and homeowners who get their insurance through the FAIR Plan, this would enable those employees, those 12 employees, at no cost to the state, to purchase their health insurance through the CGIP plan, and then they would reimburse CGIP. We did add one provision, Mr. Chairman, in Chair Murphy's committee, that if this has any adverse impact on the CGIP plan, in terms of the changing it to a different type of plan or making it ineligible to continue in its normal fashion or have any sort of adverse impact, this would not go forward. But again, this has no fiscal impact. It was just we went through a fiscal committee, and we wanted to make sure it came through Ways and Means. And with that, Mr. Chairman, we'd appreciate your support.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, in looking at the fiscal note, it seems that MMB is a little leery of this in their reading their assumption language. What would be the process that they would use to determine ahead of going down this path? Are they able to send a letter like we do to campaign finance asking for information or a ruling, or how would that work for them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I don't know precisely, but I do believe that they will be able to make a determination ahead of this occurring, such that if it raises, and likewise, I'm leery about it too, if it causes any sort of adverse impact on CGIP, I don't think any of us want it, nor do the Fair Plan folks want it to move forward. But I do believe that they'll have an opportunity to know ahead of time whether or not there's going to be an impact. By virtue of the legislation passing, they'll then notify the CGIP folks and figure it out. But if I'm not sure, by the way, Representative Holberg, I don't know if MMB is represented here this morning or not, but I will specifically ask them your question to find out if it's like CFB or if there's a different process that they use to figure that out.
And if I might, one more, given that you're an expert in this area, are these employees eligible to buy insurance on the exchange if it's not, you know, offered? Or why, I mean, we hear about what great rates and Minnesota's doing so good, and if that's the case, is that not an option? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I don't believe that it's an option. If it is, I would sure hope that they would shop there, because I know at least one business in my own district that is paying just a fraction of what they were paying before by virtue of purchasing their coverage through Minsure. Literally, their rates dropped in half. So if the Fair Plan is eligible to shop there, I hope that they'll take a look there as well. By the way, just the fact that they can purchase through CGIP doesn't mean that they have to. It just makes them, like the JUA and other entities, gives them the ability to purchase through CGIP. Perhaps they'll be able to shop elsewhere, but I'm anticipating that they'll be able to get good rates through CGIP. If they can get better rates through a private plan purchased through Minsure, I'd certainly encourage them to do that as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
we're going to have a we're just having a little discussion here. Something we missed was that the Senate file was identical to the House file.
Don't you think we should still pass the House file?
Well
it makes
then
it
they have to readopt what they've already done. If we reconsider and just pass the Senate file, then it becomes law. So it saves a procedure. You're the author. Would you like to reconsider, and we'll just take up the Senate file and be done with it once again?
Well, I did have my other amendment was to proclaim April 18th Lyndon Carlson Day, and I wanted to make sure that that was. But all right, yes,
amend the Senate file. You see,
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we reconsider the amendment that was placed on to substitute in the House language.
Okay, that motion is before us. Everybody understand what happened? We just missed that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. Now we have, we're going to have to move the.
Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw that amendment.
You're going to withdraw the amendment, and then we'll have and we now have the Senate file before us, as was the original motion before we amended. Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins, my question was along the same lines as Representative Holberg. What kind of effort has been made by this group of individuals to look at Minsure and going on the health exchange there? When you look at our numbers as a state, the individual sign-ups is woefully much lower than what the projection was for the fiscal note in March. So I'm just wondering what kind of impact having those individuals apply that, what kind of effort they made to look at that as an option, and if you can give some more details on that, or at least before this comes to the floor, if you can get some more details on that, that would be helpful.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Anderson. Yes, I would definitely encourage them to shop through Minsure because the rates are so low. I believe, actually, though, that the numbers, the target set by Minsure in October was 135,000 being rolled. The actual number is 185,000. For the fiscal note, there was a different figure that was used based on a study that was done by an MIT economist. But Minsure's own numbers have been exceeded dramatically.
And Mr. Chair and
Anderson.
Representative Atkins, I was actually looking and referring to the individual portion of that, which is woefully much lower than the March fiscal note that we had in committee. But I can send that to you if you need the information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, you're wrong, but you can send it to me if you'd like to. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, would you care to renew your motion?
Would, Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion that Senate File 1689, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have House File 2265, Representative Lane. the chair will move House File 2265, the third engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register to get the bill before the committee. And I understand we have an amendment.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would like the A6 amendment, which clears a path for grant funds that, for the purpose of this bill.
Okay, so the chair will move the A6 amendment. Any further discussion on the amendment? Puts the bill in the form that the author would like. And then I guess we need an oral amendment that does have.
Mr. Chair, members, just a suggestion. At the end of line 5, add deposited in an account in the special revenue fund and are. This would simply place them in an account, these funds in an account, and direct that to direct them to be placed in an account in the special revenue fund.
We will, I'll just incorporate that into the to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So the amendment then is before us. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Representative Lane on the bill.
Thank you. This is an election data sharing bill, and the purpose of it is to improve the accuracy of voter records and to increase access to voter registration. Briefly, we're a very mobile population, but the postal change of address and the National Death Registry no longer give us what we need. But however, whenever an individual moves, he or she does have to update the driver's license within 30 days. So the first part of this bill allows the Secretary of State to periodically obtain a list of individuals from the Department of Public Safety who have replaced their driver's license or ID card because of a change of address or canceled it due to residency out of state. The second part of this bill gives the parameters under which the Secretary of State must operate should he or she decide to enter into an agreement with a consortium of states called the Electronic Registration Information Center, or ERIC for short. Now, this is the part of the bill that could use funding but has not been funded in this bill. So let me tell you a little about this. This is a nonpartisan organization, ERIC, that was created in 2012 by a consortium of states balanced politically between Republican and Democratic secretaries of states. It has two purposes. First, to allow a continuous voter file cleanup to make our voter rolls more accurate, removing registered voters who have died, changing addresses of already registered voters, and removing duplicates. And second, it also gives us a list of those who have not registered to vote, to which the Secretary of State needs to send a card with information on how to register, potentially making same-day registration less needed and shortening those lines. The ending provision of this bill says that no state funds already appropriated to the Secretary of State's office for their budget in this biennium can be used for participating in ERIC. The cost for this unbudgeted expenditure must come from federal or grant funds. The amendment that we've just added here clarifies this provision to allow any grant funds given specifically for the ERIC project to be directly appropriated to the Secretary of State rather than needing to go through the Legislative Advisory Committee in the interim, which may or may not meet in a timely fashion, because this gives at least the possibility of clarifying voter rolls before this fall's election, should the grant funds be found. So there's zero impact on state funds in this biennium, and should the Secretary of State join ERIC, there would be a $50,000 annual membership fee should the Secretary of State choose to continue to be a member. This would decrease over time as more states join it, and this may well come out of a regular elections budget or be appropriated at that time. So there's no funds at this in this biennium. And that's the bill and this amendment.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at this kind of for the first time, and two things kind of jump out at me. The relationship with the Pew Charitable Trust with this bill, is that a formal connection? And if so, are you aware of any other nonprofit organizations that we share private or public data with, secure data with? And what are the relationships anticipated, and what other experiences do we have?
Mr. Chair, I will pass that to Beth Frazier. At the same time, I'll say that the Pew Charitable Trust is not anybody that we're sharing any data with, but I'll let her answer that further.
Ms. Frazier,
if you could identify
who you represent.
Mr. Chair and members, Beth Frazier, the Deputy Secretary of State. And this ERIC is a consortium of states and is governed by the states that are members of the organization. It was the Pew Charitable Trust helped bring the group together, but is no longer affiliated with the ERIC organization. And this would be, I think, the first consortium of this type where we would share this type of information.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Frazier, could you talk a little bit about if the data is being shared between states, is there a managing structure that is responsible for the security of the data? And is there, who's in charge of making sure that the data is secured and how the data is being used?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair and members, data security is the top priority of the ERIC project. And the way that the data sharing works is that all of the states, before they share any data, they anonymize all of the private data. So any data that a state considers private is one-way hashed before it is uploaded, which is different than encrypted. If data is encrypted, you can have a key and turn it back into figure out what the data was. If it's one-way hashed, there's no way to turn the data back into what it was. So it's one-way hashed and then uploaded. So, for example, any private data, which in our case would be driver's license numbers, full dates of birth, or the last four digits of Social Security number, is turned into a 40-digit code. And other states' data is also anonymized. And then when they match the data, if it has the same 40-digit code, then they know that this person has, for example, the same date of birth. But nobody at ERIC knows what that 40-digit code is, just that it is the same data. And when the data is given back to the states, they don't pass on that anonymized data. So, for example, we would get a report that there was an individual who had the same date of birth and same Social Security, last four digits Social Security number, for example, that has moved from one state to another. But we would not know we would not be told any information that the state did not already possess about that individual.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, lastly, just one of the provisions within this bill says that there is going to be outreach with postcards for people to register to vote. And the criteria for who receives those cards and at what time, is that the discretion of the Secretary of State?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean, the ERIC bylaws talk some about the timing requirements for when data, for when the outreach needs to be done. And it only needs to be done once. So in addition to looking at other states' data, the other thing that I think is so beneficial about joining ERIC is that they have the sophisticated matching technology, and that we would upload both the voter registration data and the driver's license information, and it would compare those two lists, so Minnesota's driver's license list to our voter registration list, and give us information on who has updated their driver's license but has not updated their voter registration. And what we know is that 70% of people that do same-day registration use an updated driver's license. So to the extent that we could get that information ahead of time and update those records ahead of time, it would decrease the number of people doing same-day registration. It would also identify people who have driver's licenses who appear to be eligible to vote, and postcards would be mailed to them saying, if you're eligible to vote, there's an easy way to do it. you know, please do so ahead of time. So they would be sent a postcard the first time that they're identified. The next time the list is uploaded, because we had already, if we had already mailed them a postcard, we would not continue to send somebody a postcard time after time. We would just send it to them.
Thank
once.
You.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, Chair moves that House File 2265 as amended, the third engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carried. Representative Houseman. Okay, we'll take 2491 first. Representative Houseman, you
care to make Chair, a motion? Mr. Chair, I move House File 2491 first engrossment be recommended to be placed on the general register, and I would further move an amendment if you...
Okay, the amendment is the A2 amendment, Representative Houseman.
2491A2. And, Mr. Chair, just perhaps I should just explain that amendment briefly and put it in the context. Both of the bills before you. At this point in the session, we sometimes like to prepare ourselves for any eventuality, and as we know, the bonding bill is one of those that requires cooperation of the Governor, House, and Senate, and both parties, because it requires a supermajority, and so we have vehicles at various places so that if there is a very last-minute decision between all of those parties, that that we can move quickly. And saving a day at that point might be helpful. So both of these are vehicle bills. And Bill Marks always prefers us to add the amendment that you see, which just clarifies that we're only making appropriations once. And that's what the amendment deals with.
So okay, any discussion then on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Any discussion on the bill as submitted? Representative Holbert.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can you tell me how the House rules on the spending limits within a bill will work? Is this going to require a suspension of the rules, or because we're within 2 weeks of the end, if we wait a while, it doesn't apply? Or, I mean, how is...
Well, these, first of all, these bills meet the deadline, and the cost is incidental. If you want us to have Mr. Marks explain that further, it does not need to go to rules, if that's what your question
is. No, Mr. Chair, my rule is if these are going to become the vehicle for a bonding bill of larger size, then the spending in that amendment would not match up with the base bill and the need to be balanced. I'm just curious.
Mr. Marks, if you want to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg and members, the controlling factor here would be the budget resolution, which the budget resolution, and I don't have the exact number in front of me, but the budget resolution had a debt service amount that was that allowed for an $850 million bonding bill, and then it also allowed for $6.4 million in spending, which was for the housing finance bonds, and an additional $125 million of general fund appropriations, or essentially cash for capital projects. So the total target for capital investment was approximate, I believe it was about $1.3 million for debt service on $850 million of bonding. That would be above the $750 that was already factored into the forecast. Another $6.4 for housing finance bonds, plus another $125 million. Presumably any bill or any amendment to this bill, once this bill is on the floor, is going to delete the sections that are in here and replace it with everything else, and it would need to conform to the budget resolution unless the budget resolution was amended. And Mr. Chair, I should also add then the purpose of the amendment that was put on here is to essentially say that that this bill, and if another bill is passed out later that has bonding in for these same purposes, only one of those, the lower number, is counted. So that if a second bill passes out of Ways and Means that has appropriations to the University of Minnesota and to Minsky for the HEPRA purposes, or for the HEPRA purposes, the amendment essentially says this one is no longer to be counted, that the one in the next bill would be counted.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that. What I'm talking about is when a bill hits the floor and that amendments have to be balanced to the bill in front of the body. In other words, for example, the budget target or the resolution in Ways and Means for K-12 was larger than the K-12 bill because of the fact that there was a separate bill for the school lunch money. And so then amendments would have been out of order had the amendment spent more than what was in the bill before the body.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoberg, actually the school and the K-12 bill, the school lunch money was in both places, so the K-12 bill on, or the K-12 portion of the supplemental bill was the same as the target, but if you're referring to Rule 4.05, that wouldn't apply when a budget resolution's in place. So it needs to fit the budget resolution. Okay. It would be okay to have a larger amendment as long as it was within the budget resolution limit. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Hausman, care to renew your motion?
I will.
Representative Hausman renews her motion then that House File 2491, the first engrossment, as amended, be recommended and placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hausman, we now have House File 2031.
And Mr. Chair, I move House File 2031 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Yes. And I also have an similar amendment for this one.
Okay, and Representative Hausman moves the A1 amendment, which accomplishes the same thing we did with the last bill. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
And Mr. Chair, though these are vehicles, I will just take the opportunity because this housing bill is before us to note it's I think one of the only bills that I have for any portion of the bill where we have 34 or 35 co-authors, bipartisan set of authors. There is a huge interest across the state in this bill. The other evening I was invited by the students of Breck School to come. They had spent an evening and all of the students were educating themselves on this issue. The faith community has engaged in a major way, and so it's one of those issues that is beginning to emerge. The state of Utah discovered that they were spending more on the problem of homelessness than if they just housed everyone, and so they set about to end homelessness, and in 8 years decreased homelessness by 78%. So it's an emerging big issue that that has some significant dollar and cents impacts, and it has impacts on academic achievement of children. Half of the homeless population are under age 21, and so there are families who are caught in this issue. So though it's a vehicle bill, I just couldn't have it before you without talking a little bit about this issue.
Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none then, Representative Hausman renews her motion that House File 2031, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Before we adjourn, just a reminder, the muffins are at the end of the table. Be sure you take one on the way out. And again, I want to thank Ms. Conley and Ms. Polkamp for providing the muffins. And for me having a birthday, yes, the alternative wouldn't be very good. You know, I do have a son. I have my youngest son always calls and gives his dad a hard time, and I always tell him the alternative isn't the best, so I'll be happy to keep adding here. With that, thank you, and meeting adjourned.